Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis. This is the 12th hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation by Zion at the 12th hour in Liberty Hills, Texas. Today is December the 27th, 2016, or it is Tebet 29, 2020. We will start this first service today with a song entitled, Open My Eyes That I May See. Open my eyes that I may see glimpses of truth thou hast for me. Place in my hands a wonderful key that shall unclasp and set me free. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my eyes I will to see. Open my eyes, illumine me, Spirit, let thee shine. Open my ears that I may hear voices of truth ascend this clear. All the waves fall on my head, everything false will disappear. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my eyes I will to see. Open my ears, illumine me, Spirit, define. Open my mouth and let me bear gladly the warm truth everywhere. Open my heart and let me prepare love with the chosen best to share. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my eyes I will to see. Open my heart, illumine me, Spirit divine. The children of the barren, more than the children of the barren woman. Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 39, text of address by V.T. Harter. May 3rd, 1947. The prayer thought is taken from the Mount of Blessings by the Ellen G. White, page 201. And it says, for the way of the transgressors is hard, but wisdom's ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. Every act of obedience unto the Messiah, every act of self-denial for his sake, every trial well endured, every victory gained over temptation is a step in the march unto the glory of the final victory. If we take Yeshua for our guide, he will lead us safely. For the road may be rough and the ascent steep. There may be pitfalls upon the right hand and upon the left. We may have to endure toil in our journey. When weary, when longing for rest, we may have to toil on. When faint, we may have to fight. When discouraged, we must still hope. But with Yahshua as our guide, we shall not fail of reaching the desired haven at last. According to the reading, we ought to pray for the wisdom and for the determination to walk in the ways of Yahweh. Only His ways are pleasantness and peace. When we must deny ourselves of something, or when we must endure a trial, for the gain of a victory over the temptation, we are to feel that these are steps toward the final victory and should see that to live the life of sin is, as it were, to live down in the gully, down where we naturally find ourselves from the birth up. For the getting to live on the mountain top, that is, the kingdom, one must, as it were, climb the steep and rough mountain road. For the climbing of the road may seem hard, but after the last step is made and the peak of the mountain reached, there is joy and comfort, confidence and victory, which no language can describe. End of prayer thought. Let us go right on into our study, Isaiah 54, verse 1. It says, I sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with child. For more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Yahweh. Now I have a point I want to make here about this breaking forth, the one that was desolate. It's time for the desolate one to break forth. And we have mentioned before about the three feeding pastures that have come and gone since 1844 for the flock to feed in of the house of Israel, the Seventh Day Adventist Church. And that is Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead. And Yahweh had about 158 years for these three feeding pastures to exist and come and go. And to and also represent the three steps of the genuine movement of the Seventh-day Adventist. But let me tell you something. There's been more than just three feeding pastures for the Adventists since 1844. There has been five feeding pastures. I represent the fifth feeding pasture. First feeding pasture was Bashan. And that was from 1850, birth of testimony to Ellen G. White, to 1890. This is prophecy. Ezekiel's four prophecy. Okay, the second feeding pasture was in the wilderness of Midian. And a typical wilderness of Midian for who? To prepare the next leader for the third feeding pasture, Mount Carmel, Gilead Center. And that leader was V.T. Holliff, and he grew up in the wilderness of Midian. And a typical wilderness of Midian from 1890 to 1930, he was born in 1885, so he was 15 years old when the second feeding pasture in the wilderness of Sinai representing Moses' second 40-year period of his life, whenever he fled King Pharaoh's palace down there in Egypt. He fled out of there. And did you know he had to cross over a border. He had to cross over a border to get into the wilderness of Midian, away from the jurisdiction of King Pharaoh in Egypt. Second feeding pasture for the Seventh-day Adventist today is the antitypical second 40-year period of Moses' life from 1890 to 1930. Now, what did that happen with the Adventists in that second feeding pasture? Where only one person actually was fed. The new truth, in order to then be able to start delivering the antitypical Israelites out of the spiritual Egyptian bondage that represented the Adventist church that they were in today. So antitypical Moses was V.T. Holliff. He's the one that became a Sabbath school teacher in the Adventist church, even though he didn't become an Adventist until about 1917, 1918. Nevertheless, he was this antitypical spiritual Moses. Okay? Now, so, V.T. Holliff then learned his lessons well as a Seventh-day Adventist Sabbath school teacher. And when Yahweh was ready to close out the second feeding pasture in 1930, representing a second 40-year period for the Adventist to sojourn, first feeding pasture was Bashan. The second feeding pasture was only for one person. That was to prepare a leader to actually be the teacher and the second feeding pastor that taught doctrine. The second feeding pastor didn't teach doctrine, didn't teach no new doctrine. Because when Moses fled Pharaoh's palace in the attack, he went into the land of Midian. He went to his future father-in-law home, and his father-in-law was a righteous person. He had the truth. He knew what the truth was. Moses didn't know what the truth was when he left Pharaoh's palace. I say he didn't. He wasn't practicing the truth. A lot of it had been eroded. He was taught by his mother from the time he was born until he was 12 years old. And Moses was taught the plan of salvation. All right enough. And Moses held on to that training that he got from his mother for the next 28 years in Pharaoh's palace, when he was taken away from his mother and his father. He had to learn the Egyptians' culture and their ways. But when he was forced to flee Pharaoh's palace at the end of a 40-year period of Moses, Moses was 40 years old when he fled there, and it is said by Ellen G. White that he had to unlearn. For the next 40 years, he had to spend unlearning what he had learned in the Egyptian palace. So 28 years of learning the ways of the heathen and practicing and having to practice their customs, it was certainly erode 12 years of spiritual training in the right way. It was certainly erode that. Yahweh couldn't have that. He couldn't have that mixture for his leader to lead his people out of the land of Egypt. Well, Viti Haraf, representing the second feeding pasture for new truth and unfolding of truth, Mount Carmel. But there was a third feeding pasture in that chain of feeding pastures. So you had Bashan, Midian, Carmel, and Gilead. I mean, those four 40-year periods exist in our history today. It was the type back then. It was four 40-year periods back then, and they are four 40-year periods today for the same purpose. So, 1930 to 1970 was the third 40-year period of Moses' ministry. So Moses spent his third 40-year period of his life in the wilderness with the children of Israel. And then when his third 40-year period was up, Yahweh had him pass the leadership on to his assistant, Joshua. And Joshua is the one that took the Ark of the Covenant, and with it, he took the children of Israel over, the remnant of the children of Israel out of the wilderness, over into the Promised Land, over the Jordan. Moses took them over the Red Sea. Joshua, 40 years later, took them over the Jordan. And both times it was a parting of the water. But the antitypical Joshua period today started in 1970 with Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas. As the fourth feeding pasture, but the third feeding pasture for doctrine. Okay, so now Brother Johnson, then he restored the creation, all of the sanctuary system today with a creation calendar for the establishment of the true time for the practice and the ordained system of true worship for the sanctuary. And so he had that period. It was a 40-year period assigned to Gilead Center. But really, Brother Johnson only lived out the 33 years of it, the first 33 years of 1970 to 2003, and I closed out the 40-year period in 2010 for Gilead Center. As the Rock period from 1930 to 1970 also had two leaders, V.T. Holliff and Ben Roden, so likewise the 40-year period for Gilead Center had two leaders, Brother W. Johnson and Denton Brunken. Okay. Now, having said all of that, let us now get into the fifth feeding pasture. And so what is the doctrine for that fifth feeding pasture? What grain represents the doctrine for this number five feeding pasture now? It's the mustard seed. Matthew 13:31. The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed. So now, for every movement, for every feeding pasture, you got to have a grain of doctrine. You got to have a grain of doctrine, at least one grain of doctrine. But the mustard seed represents seven grains of doctrine, all culminating and dovetailing into one major doctrine. And doctrine simply, the word doctrine is just another word for teachings of the truth, of the present truth, for the time period that that doctrine is to be brought forth. And so the teachings now for the kingdom of heaven, here that is set up here on earth, is all the truths now manifestly restored back into the one vessel, and that is a vessel of Israel collectively. And so all of that now, and where is that vessel to be found now in the scriptures? It's found in Zechariah 4. That's the golden bowl on top of that golden candlestick, a prophecy Zechariah had for this kingdom, this kingdom of heaven's congregation that we're in now in the 12th hour. That's what that 10th candlestick, 10 means universal. It'd be the last candlestick that the Bible mentions about. Of all the candlesticks, talking about the seven candlesticks in Revelation chapter 1, and then recording in chapter 2 and 3 what those seven candlesticks, who they were and what their names were and what they represented. The house of Israel, over a period of time, with seven different congregations in the type representing these seven candlesticks that represent seven organizations and the antitypical spiritual. And that would be where we're at today. We just had closed out the seventh candlestick. We are now in the tenth candlestick. For the Old Testament scriptures itself, from Genesis to through Malachi, represents a candlestick. And the scriptures in the New Testament, from Yahshua's time until from the cross, clear down to our time, represents a candlestick. So you add those two candlesticks, the Old and New Testament candlesticks, to the seven candlesticks in Revelation chapter 1, and you have nine candlesticks, and then you go in the tenth candlestick, that means universal. You'll find that in Zechariah chapter 4. That's a lot of information to have to give. It's taken us about 15 minutes to give all that information. Now, let us go into our study. Sing, O barren, thou didst not bear. Break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with child, for more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Yahweh. Well, Hagar, the Egyptian woman, Abraham's second wife, that had a son named Ishmael, born of the flesh, represents the married wife. Well, today that married wife then would be the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And the real wife, the number one true wife, Sarah, the desolate one, would represent then Gilead's center, Rutherford W. Johnson. For he brought forth the antitype of the married wife, Sarah, that is to spring forth, and he brought forth a message that would bring to maturity this congregation of Sarah, the desolate woman. Okay, so now, in 2002, is when this Isaiah 54:1 met its fulfillment. And I'm going to read that again now. I haven't said that. I wanted to read that Isaiah 54:1 again and show you. Saying, O Barren, Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, 1970-2003. In 2003, thou that didst not bear, said, you know, the Adventist Church did not bring forth this here purified 144,000 during her time period with her three major feeding passions of doctrine, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead. No, she didn't bring forth any children. Break forth in the singing, now it says to Gilead Center. It's time to break forth in the singing and cry aloud. What does it mean, cry aloud? This is the announcement of the fourth and fifth angel that's to join the third angel message in 2002 at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, starting at the Passover, to swell the third angel's message into a loud cry. So it says, break forth and sing and shout and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with child. So, in other words, Gilead Center did not bring forth this man-child that she was carrying for 33 years. Didn't bring forth the man-child. The man-child was introduced in 1970 at Gilead Center as the Isaac Branch message. Brother Johnson introduced that man-child. And Brother Johnson struggled for 33 years to see if that man-child would come forth, but never did, because Gilead Center was not to deliver that man-child, even though she had the message for it. For more are the children of the desolate, that's Sarah now. So, the desolate then would be the house of David, represented by Sarah now, the true wife of Abraham, the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven set up here in the 12th parabolic hour. That's when Sarah showed up in the antitype. So, then Brother Johnson, he represented then Hagar, because Hagar represents the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the Egyptian mother, the firstborn of Abraham, producing the firstborn of Abraham, Ishmael, represented the Adventist Church. So Brother Johnson represented Hagar from 1970 to 2003. Detnar Brumpkin, his successor, represents Sarah. Okay. Then the children of, says, for more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, said the Yahweh. For, now let's, here's a comment by V.T. Holler. For two women are brought to you. One is barren, and the other is not. The barren woman is encouraged to break forth into singing. Okay, so that's exactly what we did, because we felt like that the man-child was born in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, starting at the Passover. We not only felt that way, but we had the evidence by the spirit of prophecy, and then through the spirit of prophecy, by the presence of the man-child in person in 2002, for she is promised to have many more children than the one who is having children. So the Adventist Church has been having children ever since 1844, and she's still having children today. But as long as she has 144,000 in her midst, she's going to keep bearing children. Because that's what causes the Adventist Church to stay in existence today. is the fact that she has 144,000 that has an appointed time by prophecy to come forth out of her midst, out of her bowels, so to speak. And so as long as that 144,000 is there, the Adventist Church is going to be in existence today. As long as she has 144,000 in her midst. But as soon as that 144,000 comes forth, then that's going to fully fulfill this right here, where it says now, the barren woman, Sarah, is to encourage to break forth into singing, for she has promised to have many more children than the one who is having children. Now, what happened in the top when the angel came and told Abraham, says, your wife Sarah is going to have this promised son. This time in the season of next year, says she's going to bring forth this promised son. And what did Sarah do? She laughed in her heart. Oh no, I'm too old for that. But what happened? It says, for she is promised to have many more children than the one who is having children. Okay. Now, Hagar had the first son of Abraham by the flesh, Egyptian. She was cast out of Sarah's household, Abraham's household, and she went, and no doubt she raised up another 11 sons to go with Ishmael. Okay, so there was, so she was raising a family, and Sarah was just getting started. Okay. While Sarah was getting started, they said, now, to learn who these women are, let us turn to the fourth chapter of Galatians. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by the promise. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants. The one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth unto bondage, which is Hagar, Galatians 4:22-24. For the Apostle Paul reminds us that Abraham had two wives and two sons. We all know the story, that when Elohim called Abraham to depart from his country and to go to an unknown land, Yahweh promised to give him a son. Something like 25 years passed by, and still the arrival of a son was not in sight. Sarah was then about 90 years old, Genesis 17:17. During those years of the Abrahams and Sarah's waiting for a son, Hagar became Abraham's wife, and through her Ishmael was born. Sarah, therefore, is a desolate woman put aside. And Hagar is the one who has an husband. Accordingly, Isaiah 54:1 is allegorically speaking of these two women and their children. As to what the allegory is about, the apostle explained, for this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth unto Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free from which is the mother of us all. Galatians 4:25-26. Agar symbolizes Jerusalem, the city of the Jews, the born after the flesh, whereas Sarah symbolizes Jerusalem that is to come, the city of the born again, the children of the promise. So Sarah then represents the house of David, the mountain of the house of Yahweh that's established in the top of the mountains, Isaiah 2 and Micah 4. Where many nations are going to come and say, let us go up to that mountain, to that antitypical mountain of Sarah that she has produced in the antitype. And that's the house of David. That's that little stone in Daniel 2. Sarah is the mother of that little stone hewn out of the mountain without hands that grows until the mountain fills the whole earth, that strikes the image on the feet. This Sarah, in other words, is another name for the house of David. The congregation of the Sarah Abraham's legal first wife is the house of David. Is this mountain of the house of Yahweh? For it is written, rejoice, thou barren that bearest not. Break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children than she which hath an husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son. Okay. Now the casting out of the bondwoman then was the bringing forth the Seventh-day Adventist church to a close. As far as having a prophet that represents the prophecy that the Adventist church should be teaching and adhering to and fulfilling, and knowing that they were fulfilling this as a body themselves. Really, they didn't even know that they had produced a prophet, or two prophets at least, or three prophets. Since Ellen G. White, the Adventist church didn't even know that they had produced three prophets or even a fourth one. Did you realize that the Adventist church produced four prophets after Ellen G. White? Okay. So now, those four prophets, in one way or another, taught the truth that those first five groups of laborers mentioned in Matthew 20 verse 1 taught that represented five different movements and five different periods in Earth's history for Israel. Okay? It says now, but as then he that was born after flesh persecuted him that was born after the Spirit. Okay? So even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the Scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. Galatians 4:27-31. And her son, Ishmael, represents the congregation in the Old Testament period, and that Sarah and her son, Isaac, represents the church in the New Testament period. For the membership of the Old Testament church was indeed of the flesh. So the Adventist church today represented the church and a type of the church of the Old Testament that was of the flesh. From 1844 clear up through 2010, the Seventh-day Adventist church represented the antitypical Old Testament church with the leadership as the antitype of the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes at the cross. For it was made up of whosoever was born from the stock of Jacob. But the members of the New Testament congregation, since 2010, now folks, we fast-forwarded this prophecy clear up to 2010, especially the ones here projected are persons who have, by the Spirit of the truth, been converted unto the Yahshua. So when did I truly become converted unto the Yahshua? I mean, I'm talking about my ultimate conversion. I was converted to the Yahshua when I was 6 years old in 1844 with a love for the truth that only the Spirit can give you. And that's from being born of the Spirit into unto a spiritual mother. 6 years old, I recognize that calling of the Spirit. I love the Bible at 6 years old. And as it was impossible for Isaac to have been born by the will of the flesh, impossible, yes, so impossible it is for these children of the Spirit of the truth to be born by the will of men. Brother Johnson tried to bring forth a spiritual house of Israel, representing Hagar, the fleshly house of Israel. He tried to bring forth a spiritual house of Israel and give birth to a spiritual house of Israel. And Gilead Center was anything but a spiritual house of Israel. From 1970 to 2003, it was a fleshly, carnal house, a branch of the house of Israel. Definitely, from the Old Testament, Hagar's congregation, as a descendant of the Old Testament, Hagar. Okay, so now it says, good reason for the delay in the fulfilling of his promise unto Sarah. Therefore, it is very obvious. He should have put the pronoun it. Let's read that again. For the reason for the delay and the fulfilling of his promise unto thee, Sarah, therefore it is very obvious. Is a verb, which is improper grammar, but we're going to do the best we can by adding a word that would better explain what we're talking about. He was writing both history and prophecy by the life of the Abraham's family. For he, with the causing of the Ishmael's birth by the delaying of the birth of the Isaac. For the Ishmael, therefore, as the type of the Hebrews, as the children after the flesh, is with the proceeding of the Isaac as a type of the antitypical apostolic children of the promise. For our greatest interest, however, is for the knowing of the time the book of the Isaiah 54, chapter 54, finds this entire fulfillment, and for the generation unto which this allegorical prophecy especially applies. For the knowing whether it was written especially for the benefit of the early apostolic congregation of the Church of the Nazarene, and you know Yahshua came from Nazareth, and that's why they called him a Nazarene, a Nazarite. His followers were called Nazarites. For the congregation in the Middle Ages are for the congregation in our time, since none of the New Testament writers comment except on the first verse of the Isaiah 54. Obviously, the chapter was not written especially for the people at that time. Moreover, verse 14 further proves that the time under which the prophecy applies, that of the time that the prophecy applies. For the righteousness shalt thou be in the righteousness. In the righteousness shalt thou be established. Thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear. And terror, and from the terror, for it shall not come near unto thee. Isaiah 54:14. So this is a promise unto the house of Sarah, the one that breaks forth into singing here, the house of David. Since 2002, this house has met this fulfillment of breaking forth into singing, for we have been singing ever since the Passover of 2002, this antitypical house of Sarah, the desolate mother, the legal desolate married woman. For the promise under this latter section of the antitypical apostolic congregation of the 144,000 house of the David in the 12th parabolic hour judgment of the living time, in the fifth feeding pasture, is that she shall be far from oppression, be not ruled by another people, that terror will not come nearer unto her, and that she will have no need for the fearing, in the view of the fact that the congregation heretofore has never been free from any of these logic rules, that she is yet for the realizing of these promises. Hence, with the generation under which this chapter is addressed, is with the congregation that is for the receiving of these promises, is not in the past, verily in the future. And the fact that the inspiration now for the first time unseals these long concealed promises and now brings them unto the attention makes them meet in the due season, for the truth is obvious. Unto the congregation, after this announcement has done its work, is soon to emerge into this glorious period of the time. Furthermore, verse 15 says, "Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake." Isaiah 54:15. Here she is warned that her enemies will gather together against her, but not by the Yeshua. They will therefore not prosper, but will fall for her sake. For her enemies will never again be able to carry any of her members into the captivity, not into the prison or into the flames of the fire, nor into the dens of the beasts, for she is never again to see the Assyrian or the Chaldeans prosper against her. Now, your Assyrians are Egyptians, Ishmaelites. Your Chaldeans are Babylonian. And that is a sect of the Arabs that the Ishmaelites are kin to. Prosper against her. Neither is she any more to suffer the persecution by the Jews and by the Romans. All of these are now in the past, and their reoccurrence will have no effect on her. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work. And I have created the waster to destroy. No, a weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Yahweh, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Yahweh. Isaiah 54:16-17. Now, I want to go back and reread this scripture and make a point or two more on it. Behold, I have created the smith. In other words, he's created and raised up a new prophet. This smith would be the antithetical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, that bloweth the coals in the fire. In other words, he has to create a new instrument. You got to go heat up the coal furnace. You got to go and get those coals lighted back up and warmed back up, and get them to producing heat, because you've got a new instrument that you've got to forge and bring forth. So this Elijah that is sent in these last days, fulfilling Matthew 17:10-11, that Elijah must first come and restore all things. How is he going to restore all things if he don't have a new instrument? Why does he have to create a new instrument? Because his old instrument is dull and wore out. So he has to create a new one. Okay? So he says, to bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work. And I have created the waster to destroy. Now, who is this waster that he has created to destroy? Donald Trump, antithetical Cyrus. He's a waster. Yahweh says, now I've created him. And I brought him forth now. And I said, he is a waster and he is a destroyer. And take away all the refuge. And take it away from the earth, period. Alright. No weapon that is formed against thee, this thee is antitypical Shira. And the kingdom of David, the everlasting kingdom of David that Sarah represents, okay, shall prosper. And every tongue that shall rise against thee in the judgment, time that you're in, you're in the judgment of the living now, in the 12th parabolic hour. So everybody, every tongue that rises against you now, since 2002, when the judgment of the living started with the at the ancient men for the house, started at the house of Yahweh, Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center, Kermit, with Verlis Johnson as the ancient man before the house. He was the latest, the last one appointed over the candlestick of Laodicea. He was the first one to feel the stroke of Yahweh's wrath when the judgment started for at the house of Yahweh in Kermit, Texas, 2002. And he says, against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. So Verlis Johnson rose up and condemned me and told me that I was the enemy in the camp, that I was the one that had to go, and he pronounced judgment upon me and cast me out of his house and pronounced a death sentence upon me and sent me packing away from his abode at Gilead Center. This is the heritage of the servants of Yahweh, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Yahshua, Isaiah 54:16-17. So far, the weapons that were formed against the spiritual house of Israel have prospered. But the house of Israel here in the prophecy is to be protected. And which is the house of Sarah, the house of David, and being completely in the Yahweh's hand, everyone that rises against her in the judgment, she will condemn by the truth and righteousness. Okay, so it says, our existence and success in the work of Yahweh, therefore, is no longer a mystery. Prophecy plainly points out that many are rising against us, but none have and none will ever prosper. For the Yahweh who created the smith and the waster to destroy is just as well able to create peace and security. For the spirit of prophecy iterates thus. Okay, as the saints left the cities and villages, okay, this is a retelling of quoting Ellen G. White there from early writings, page 284 and 285, which I don't believe it has the same interpretation as V.T. Hollis put upon it, but nevertheless we're going to go ahead and read it. As the saints left the cities and villages, they were pursued by the wicked, who sought to slay them, but the swords that were raised for the killing of Yahweh's people broke and fell as powerless as a straw. For the angel of Yahweh shielded the saints as they cried out day and night for the deliverance, for their cry came up before the Yahweh. Early writings, page 284 and 285. But if his people remain separate and distinct from the world as a nation that do righteousness, Elohim will be their defense, and no weapons formed against them shall prosper. Testimony, Volume 5, page 601. For the lesson is clear, for the congregation is emerging from one period, that's out of the 11th parabolic hour, for the Gilead Center from 1970 to 2003, and merging into another, into the 12th parabolic hour, into the fifth feeding pasture. You know, we're always told that the 12th hour is set aside for the harvest. But any time that you have a harvest, you got to first have a period of time for the seed sowing before you can even think about bringing forth the harvest. So that seed sowing then would have to be in the beginning of the 12th parabolic hour. And since the 12th parabolic hour began here with the house of David, the antitypical house of Sarah, the true wife, the legal true wife of Abraham, you have to have a seed sowing time. So, as I have said before, I have produced over probably at least 10,000 one-hour CDs, one-hour recordings, on the unfolding of the prophecy here in this 12th parabolic hour since we separated from Kermit, Texas in 2010. I started keeping record about 10 years ago, a faithful record of my one-hour sermon. And I know that they go over 8,000 one-hour CDs, and they cover every object, every subject from Genesis to Revelation, and they cover the Shepherd's Rod textbook that V.T. Hallef published several times. I'm talking about the main meat of the set, the Shepherd's Rod, that we need to unfold today. It's where we're getting our inspiration today. It says, for the lesson is clear, for the congregation is emerging from one period of the 11th parabolic hour and merging into another. In other words, out of the judgment of the dead period into the judgment of the living period, out of the sixth seal, coming to a close in 2002 with the opening of the seventh seal of Revelation 8:1. That's the new period we are entering into, judgment of the living, the time when the harvest will take place. She is at the dawn of a new day. Her glory is now to be manifested. For it says she's at the dawn of a new day. So what does that mean? It means that when the 12th hour is over, when the 12th hour is over, that's your last hour of the night, and your first hour of the day is when the sun comes up in the morning. That's when you start counting from 1 to 12 again. And so it says that we are now in the dawning of a new day. Well, each parabolic hour, there's 12 of them, you have to have a beginning of that hour and an ending of that hour. Every beginning of every new parabolic hour is called the dawning of the day. So in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, we had a new dawning of a new day for the 12th parabolic hour. Okay? For her glory is now to be manifested, her great work finished, and all her children, a great multitude, is saved rather than her enemies triumphing over her. She is the triumph over them. Okay? Since the congregation as a whole is here presented by both mother and children, we should know what part of the congregation of the spiritual Israel is represented by the mother and what part by the children. According unto verse 17, the chapter concludes that the servants of the Yahweh, those who bring forth converts, constitute the mother, and their converts, the laity, constitute the children. What is meant by her travailing in the birth? For the answer, let us turn unto Galatians 4:19. My little children, of whom I travail in the birth again until Yahshua be formed in you, those for whom the Apostle Paul was laboring for the bringing of the Yahshua unto their knowledge, he says he was travailing in the birth for them until Yahshua be formed in them, until they be fully converted unto him, be born again. Now that we understand the allegory of these two women and of their children, also the time for which Isaiah 54 was written, we shall study the chapter briefly, verse by verse, in all its details, as far as Yahweh permits. Isaiah 54:2-3. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth. the curtains of thy habitation. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stays, for thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the destined cities to be inhabited. All these terms enlarge, stretch, spare not, lengthen, and strengthen mean to do everything possible to amply meet the situation, for the making accommodations for a larger number of the converts, to do everything possible now, so that when you break on the right and on the left, when the multitude of the converts begin to pour in, you be not confused and unable to accommodate. Do not disappoint the people, and moreover assure the Yeshua, thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles and make the destined cities to be inhabited. The prophecy therefore brings us unto the days of the restitution of all things. Matthew 17:11. This is when the antitypical Elijah comes again, Malachi 4:5, to restore all things. Isaiah 54:4. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame, for thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shall not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. Yes, she is reassured that she need no longer fear, need not to be thrown into disorder and confusion any more, that she shall forget her reproach and widowhood, Yahweh is departing from her. Isaiah 54:5. For thy Maker is thine husband, the Yeshua the host is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, for the Elohim of the whole earth shall be he be called. Okay, our enemies may say anything they wish, but Elohim himself testifies that he is our Elohim, the Elohim that made us, the Redeemer, the Elohim of the whole earth. Isaiah 54:6-7. For the Yeshua hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in the spirit, and a wife of youth when thou wast refused, saith the Yahweh. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. For the statement, for a small moment have I forsaken thee, being set forth in the contrast unto the statement, but with a great mercy, but with the great mercies will I gather thee, shows that Elohim's forsaken her is her dispersion among the Gentiles, and that her gathering is her returning unto the homeland, her inhabiting the desolate cities. Okay, this brings the close of our study. This hour. Contact says that the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Purify my soul like gold tried in the fire. Song that I've written. I've been living a long time in this world, so it seems. Chasing rainbows and following dreams. Fulfilling desires and trying to please myself in this world with a life filled with ease. But my Savior knows better, He knew all along. And trials with health keep me strong. From the cares of this life with intense desire, and purify my soul like gold that in the fire. Those are chasing rainbows and that heart of gold, for treasures are made up in heaven with gold. And our manifold blessings come from the storehouse above, and the windows of heaven are open to love. But my Savior knows better, He knew all along that death and trials would help keep me strong. From the cares of this life that they can't resign, my soul like gold that in the fire. But now I surrender. the land of the living I know soon to be, and rejoice in the land, the home of the free. But my Savior knows better, he knew all along that death and trials would help keep me strong. From the cares of this life with intense desire, and purify my soul.